One of Murphy's laws is that before you can do anything, you have to do something else first. And the one thing that you have to do first before you can do any productive work is that you have to get yourself organized. The core function of good time management is planning and organizing yourself and your work for maximum productivity. And it is only possible to get the best out of yourself when you have determined a place for everything and everything is in its place. The top 3% of achievers are all persistent, continual planners. They are forever writing and rewriting their lists of goals. They think on paper and they are continually analyzing and evaluating their plans. I used to wonder why it was that so many successful people seem to spend so much time planning. Over time, I learned that the more time you spend planning, the better and more foolproof your plans become. In reworking your plans for achieving your goals become increasingly believable and achievable. Your confidence in your ability to accomplish them grows. When you break down even the biggest goal into its individual parts, and then organize the goal into a step-by-step series of specific actions, it seems much more manageable and under your control. Not only that, the more you plan, the more you drive the goal into your subconscious mind, where it takes on a motivational power of its own. Payoff from good planning is enormous. It is estimated that 1 minute in planning saves at least 5 minutes in execution. Put another way, your investment in planning pays you a 500% return. Since all that most of us have to sell is our time, the more productive and efficient our time usage, all other things being equal, the more we will eventually be paid. Can you get a 500% return on investment doing anything else? Sometimes people say that they do not have time to sit and plan. The fact is that even if you really force yourself, it is hard to spend more than a few minutes per day in planning, and the only way you will ever get the time you need is by planning your activities carefully in advance. On the other hand, action without planning is the reason for every failure. If you look back over the major mistakes you've made in your life, they will almost all have one thing in common. That one thing is that you had a tendency to rush into the situation without thinking enough about it. You either did not get enough information, or you did not take the time to weigh and balance the pros and cons before acting. You will also find that each of the most successful accomplishments of your life was accompanied by a good plan. The more time you took to think through the ramifications of your actions, the better, the more efficient, and the more satisfying was the end result. In fact, the better and more complete your plans, the greater likelihood of success. Someone once said that success is tons of discipline. One of the best exercises of self-discipline is to take the time to think through and plan out everything you do before you begin. Here are 4 ideas you can use to help yourself in getting organized. 1. Remember that neatness is a key habit for personal productivity. You can dramatically increase your productivity simply by cleaning up and organizing your workspace. There is a saying, order is heaven's first law. Well, order is earth's first law, too. You need a sense of order to feel relaxed and in control of your environment and your life. You actually get a feeling of pleasure and satisfaction each time you put some part of your life or work in order. When you clean up your desk or office, when you clean out your car, when you organize your purse or briefcase, or even your home and your closets, you feel like a more effective human being. A good exercise is to stand back from your desk and ask, what kind of a person works at that desk? Look in your purse or briefcase and ask, what kind of a person would have a purse or a briefcase like that? Look at your car, look in your closet, look at your house and your yard and ask, what kind of a person would live that way? Would you entrust that person with an important task? Why or why not? Stand back and honestly evaluate yourself as if through the eyes of a neutral third party. What do you see? In a series of interviews conducted recently, 50 out of 52 executives said they would not promote a person with a messy desk or messy work environment. Even if the person was producing good work, they said they would not trust a position of responsibility to a person who could not get himself organized. Think about that. Many people who work in a messy environment use their intelligence to justify and excuse themselves. They say things like, I know where everything is, or they say humorous things like, a clean desk is the sign of a sick mind. However, every single time and motion study of efficiency in the workplace concludes that these are really exercises in self-delusion. The person who says he or she knows where everything is using too much of their mental capacity remembering where they place things rather than doing the job. People who say they work well in a cluttered environment are usually wrong. If they worked in a neat, well-organized environment for any length of time, they would be surprised at how much more effective and productive they were. If you or a person you know has a tendency to justify a cluttered desk, challenge yourself or the other person to work with a clean desk for one entire day. The result will be interesting. Clear your desk of everything but the one thing you're working on. If necessary, place things in drawers, on the credenza behind you, in the wastebasket, in cupboards, or even on the floor. Do whatever is necessary to turn your desk into a clear, clean, uncluttered work environment with just one thing, the most important thing before you when you begin. The second idea for getting yourself organized follows from the first. It is to have everything you need at hand before beginning. Like a good cook or a master craftsman or any professional, assemble all the tools of your trade before starting on the job. Get all the information that you will need. Get pens, notepads, stick-on notes, calculator, ruler, dictaphone, file folders, and anything else you can think of before you commence work. Idea number three is to resolve to handle every piece of paper only once. Make a decision to do something with it when you pick it up, and don't pick it up unless you're ready to act on it. It is better to stack it up and put it aside for appropriate action later. Stephanie Winston, in her book, Getting Organized, recommends that you use what she calls the TRAF system, where the word TRAF is spelled T-R-A-F. Each letter stands for a specific action. T stands for toss. One of the best time management tools in any home or office is the wastebasket. The fastest way to save time in reading anything is to simply throw it away. This applies to junk mail, unwanted subscriptions and catalogs, sales circulars, and anything else that is not relevant to your goals. Use the wastebasket to get rid of reading materials that have been hanging around for months. Ask yourself, if I did not read this, would there be any negative consequences? If the answer is no, then throw it away as fast as you can. The next letter in the TRAF system is R. R means to refer or delegate. When you pick up a piece of paper, ask yourself if there is someone else who should be acting on this. Is there someone else who can do it better than you? Is there anyone else to whom you can delegate action? The third letter in the TRAF system is A for action. These are the pieces of paper, letters, proposals, and so on that you must personally do something about. So get yourself a file folder and put the word action on the tab. Have the folder handy. When you come across something that you need to do something about, simply put it in the file to work on later. The last letter is F, which stands for file. But before you file anything, remember that 80% of papers filed are never needed, used, or seen again. Designating something to be filed creates work. Before you decide to put something in your files, ask, what would happen if I couldn't find this piece of paper? Ask, what would be the negative consequences of not being able to have this information available? If there are no negative consequences, or very little would happen, or if you could get the information somewhere else, then throw the piece of paper away. By the way, I initially found it quite difficult to use the wastebasket so generously. But with experience, I have found that very little of what I have thrown away has ever been needed again. The habit of tossing rather than saving and filing has been a big time saver for me, as it has been for many others. The purpose of the TRAF system is to get you to take action on a piece of paper when you pick it up. Do something, anything, with the piece of paper. Move it along at least one step. One of the greatest time wasters of all is continually picking up the same piece of paper, reading it, putting it down, and having to come back to it later, over and over. The fourth idea for getting yourself organized is, when you're finished with it, put it away. Complete your transactions. Start with a clean workspace and end with a clean workspace. There is something deeply satisfying about task completion, and that means leaving nothing out. Discipline yourself to finish what you start. Teach and encourage others to finish their work and put things away. Especially teach your children by setting a good example. One of the hardest things for people to learn is the habit of putting things away, but it is a habit that serves them all their lives. There are several time management tools and procedures you should have for maximum productivity and good organization. The first of these is some kind of time planning system that contains everything you need to plan and organize every area of your life. The best time planners enable you to plan for the year, for the month, for the week, and for each day. In your planner, for example, you need a master list where you can write down every task, every goal, every required action as it comes up. This master list becomes the core of your system. It is from this master list that individual tasks are allocated to various months, weeks, and days. The second part of a time planning system is a calendar that enables you to lay out your time and plan several months ahead. With the ideal system, you will be able to transfer individual items from your master list to the exact day when you intend to do them. The next part of your time planning system is a daily list. This daily list is perhaps the single most important planning tool you can have. Some people call it a to-do list. Alan Lakin, the time management expert, found that every effective executive he spoke with used a list. He also found that the ineffective executives, those who felt swamped by too many things to do in too little time, either did not use a list or resisted the idea of writing everything on a list. On your daily list, you write down every single thing that you intend to do over the course of the day. My experience has proven that you can increase your efficiency by 25% the first day that you start using a list if you are not using one already. You can bring order out of chaos faster with a list than with any other time management tool. In fact, if at any time you feel yourself overwhelmed with work, stop and take the time necessary to list every single thing you need to do. The very action of organizing your responsibilities on a list will enable you to bring them under your control. During the course of the day, new tasks and responsibilities will come up. Telephone calls will have to be returned. Correspondence will have to be dealt with. In every case, write it down on the list before you do it. Something that seems urgent, something that would distract you from your work, regains its real significance when it is written down. Something that is written down on the list next to all your other tasks and responsibilities often doesn't seem so important after all. The next step in time management is to organize your list of the day's activities. There are three keys for organizing the list. The first key is to recognize the difference between the urgent and the important. The urgent is seldom important, and the important is seldom urgent. The most pressing tasks on your list are those tasks that are both urgent and important. They have to be done immediately, and they can have significant future consequences, positive or negative. The best way to organize your list is with the ABCDE system. A stands for must do, very important. B stands for should do, important. C stands for things that it would be nice to do, but are not important. D stands for delegate, and E stands for eliminate. Look at your list and ask yourself what the one or two things are that are more important than almost all the others put together. That's where you begin. Condition yourself to use the list as a blueprint for the day. This list is like a map to show you how you're going to get from the morning to the evening in the most effective and efficient way. The list is a guide to what you have to do and what is more or less important. Refuse to do anything unless you have written it down on the list and organized it relative to its value with the other items on the list. Another wonderful tool for getting yourself organized is called the 45 file system. This is a tickler file that enables you to plan activities as far as 2 years in advance. The 45 files are divided this way. There are 31 files numbered 1 through 31 for the days of the month. There are 12 files for the months of the year, January through December. The last two files are for the next 2 years. This is a wonderful system, and I used to use it with 45 hanging folders in my desk drawer. Now, however, a stationery company has developed a product called Desk File, which is an expanding book with 45 pages with dates, months, and years, as I described. Called Desk File, it is produced by Mead Company and is available at your stationery store. It is a terrific time management tool. Now, here are six more ideas you can use to help get yourself organized for maximum productivity. The first idea is to prepare your daily list for the next day, the evening, or night before. The very best exercise is to plan your entire next day as the last thing you do before going home from work. When you plan your day the night before, your subconscious goes to work on your plans and goals while you're asleep. Very often, you will wake up in the morning with ideas and insights that apply to the work of the day. Sometimes the answer to a problem you are working on will pop into your mind when you wake up or when you're taking a shower. A second benefit of preparing your list the night before is that it enables you to sleep more soundly. A major reason for insomnia is laying awake trying not to forget to remember something that you have to do the following day. When you write down everything you have to do on a piece of paper, it clears your mind and enables you to sleep deeply. The second idea is that scheduling your time reduces stress and releases energy. It gives you a feeling of control and well-being to know that you are organized, to know that your entire day is planned in advance. The third idea is to take time to sit, to think, and to plan. When you read the biographies and autobiographies of successful men and women, you find that almost all of them have one thing in common. They have a tendency to go to bed at a reasonable hour and to rise early. Early to bed and early to rise. Many successful people arise at 5 a.m. and 5:30 a.m. so that they can have the time to think and plan for the coming day. As a result, they are always more effective than those who sleep in. A few minutes of quiet reflection before you begin any undertaking can save you many hours in execution. A fourth idea is to use an organized filing system both at home and at work. As much as 30% of the time in any work environment is spent looking for misplaced items, things that are lost because they have not been filed correctly. The best and simplest of all filing systems is an alphabetical system. In conjunction with a filing system, you should have a master list. The master list gives you the title of every file that you have. The list also tells you where the file is located. One of the finest tools for an office filing system is called a Rolodex. There are all kinds of uses for a Rolodex at home as well. You can purchase them in any stationery store, and they will allow you to keep track of a variety of files in a variety of ways. There are few activities so frustrating as spending your valuable time looking for misplaced materials because no thought has been given to a filing and retrieval system. A fifth organizing idea is to do creative work during your internal prime time. Your internal prime time is the time of the day, according to your body clock, when you are the most alert and productive. For most people, this is in the morning. For some people, however, it is in the evenings. Occasionally, a writer or an artist or a rock star may find that his or her prime time is in the early hours of the morning. As men and women in the world of work, it is important that we be aware of our internal prime time so that we can schedule our most important projects accordingly. There's also external prime time. This is the time when your customers or clients are most readily available. Each person should give some thought to structuring their day around both their internal and external prime times. A sixth idea to help you in organizing yourself is to use a dictating machine for correspondence. Dictating equipment is some of the best time-saving equipment in business or private life. Once you learn how to use a dictating machine, you can cut your time of writing by as much as 80%. That is, the time it takes to dictate is about 20% of the time it takes to write something by hand. A dictating machine also saves the time of the person who's going to type it out. It is usually much easier to transcribe from a tape than to interpret a person's handwriting. In using a dictating machine, there are two things to remember. First, you write an outline. Jot down the major headings and subheads before you begin. Think through the sentence structure in your mind before you dictate onto the tape. Don't be afraid to go back, erase, and say it over again using a better choice of words. The second thing to remember while using a dictating machine is to avoid being a perfectionist. Go back and correct the major mistakes later. It's much easier to edit something that has been transcribed than to write it or dictate it perfectly in the first place. Concentrate on getting your thoughts on paper as quickly and as effectively as possible, and then go back and clean it up before finalizing. Before we leave this section on getting organized, there is one more area to talk about, and that is air travel. Since so many people are traveling by air for business today, it is important to know how to make every hour of traveling time count for yourself and for your company. Some years ago, a major airline hired a consulting firm to compare the efficiency of flying first class with working in a normal office. The study concluded that 1 hour of uninterrupted work in an airplane was the equivalent of 3 hours in a normal work environment. The key word was uninterrupted. If you plan ahead and organize your work before you leave for the airport, you can accomplish an enormous amount while you're in the air. The starting point of getting the most out of airtime is to pre-book a non-bulkhead window seat. The reason you want a non-bulkhead seat is so that you have a tray that opens up in front of you that you can work on. Also, you are not allowed to keep a briefcase during takeoffs and landings with a bulkhead seat, and your briefcase is your traveling office. The reason you want a window seat is so that you can get out your materials and go to work without the possibility of someone wanting to get past you and go to the washroom. Also, be sure to specify to your travel agent that you do not want a seat opposite the kitchen or the bathroom on the airplane. These seats are too noisy and distracting for concentrated effort. When you pack your work for a trip, organize it by subject. Sit down at your desk before you leave and think through what you are going to get accomplished when you're in the air. Then make sure you have all the information and files that you require. A useful tip is to arrive at the airport 1 hour before your departure. Most business flyers arrive with less than 30 minutes to catch the plane. This may seem to be time efficient, but studies have shown that if you arrive at the airport in a rush, it takes as much as 2 hours to settle down to the point where you can concentrate once the plane has taken off. It's much better for you to get to the airport relaxed so that as soon as you get on board, you can begin work and continue working until the plane lands. Be sure to work steadily throughout the flight. Just put your head down and stay at it without diversion. Resist the temptation to read newspapers or airline magazines. Some travelers carry a set of earphones which they use to discourage conversation from the person in the next seat. One frequent flyer I know has a great answer when his seatmate wants to make conversation. When the person next to him asks what he does, He turns to him or her and smiles sweetly and says, "I'm a fundraiser for a religious cult." This has never failed to terminate the conversation and leave him free to work peacefully for the rest of the flight. Be sure to have all materials, envelopes, stamps, and Federal Express envelopes at hand when you begin working. Your briefcase is your office away from the office and should be fully equipped with everything you require. You will be amazed at how much work you can produce in an airplane when you put your mind to it. One final point. People who travel a lot on business find that the best time to work is on the way out, when they are fresh, and the best time to relax or watch the movie is on the way back. On the way back, you're usually tired and hardly capable of productive work, so be sure to make that outbound flight count. Getting yourself organized is the starting point of peak performance. Careful planning and organizing of your work before you begin will yield dramatic improvements in your productivity, your performance, and your results. Your ability to set priorities among your goals, tasks, and activities is the key to personal effectiveness. See, the natural human tendency is to major in minors and to work very diligently on things that in many cases need not be done at all. So let's start with how you set your own personal priorities. Number one, begin with your values. What is important to you and in what order? Peak performance and high self-esteem only occurs when your activities and your values are congruent, when your activities and your values fit together like a hand in a glove. In fact, incongruence or being out of sync between your values and your activities leads to stress, unhappiness, and dissatisfaction. So the starting point of peak performance is to ask, what are your values? What do you believe in? What is important to you? What would you sacrifice for? What would you give up something for? What do you stand for, or what would you not stand for? Now, point two is that the wrong ordering of values can lead to underachievement and failure. Human beings have been defined as choosing organisms, in that we are always making choices, and we always make a choice between what we value more versus what we value less. In fact, sometimes the only way you can tell what you truly value is to look at your behaviors, to observe the choices that you make on a day-to-day basis, and especially to observe how you spend your time. How you spend your time is the very best representation of what your true values and your true priorities are. Here's an example of an ordering of values. Remember that we always choose the higher value over the lower value. We always choose what is most important to us over what is less important. But let us say a person had five values, and the values in order were: one was spiritual, and the second was family, and the third was health, and the fourth was career, and the fifth was integrity. Now, if you look at the first three values, spiritual, family, and health, those seem to be pretty well organized. Then you look at the next two, career and integrity, and you notice that your career, in this example, comes ahead of integrity. Well, a person whose career is a higher value, success in their career is a higher value than integrity, will always choose success in the career over integrity. A person who places their career ahead of integrity is a very different person from the person who places integrity ahead of their career. Or, here's another example. What if you had your values organized like this? Career was number one, family was number two, health was number three, integrity was number four, and spiritual development or inner development was number five. Since career is your number one value, and there are many people whose activities demonstrate that their career is more important than anything else, if your career comes ahead of your family, then you will sacrifice your family to your career. If your career comes ahead of health, then you'll sacrifice your health to your career. If your career comes ahead of integrity, you'll sacrifice integrity to your career. If your career comes ahead of your inner development, then you'll sacrifice inner development to your career. So you can tell by observing many people, by the way they use their time, that often their career comes ahead of all other considerations, and their values are completely out of sync for living a happy, healthy, long life. Now here's another organization of values. Number one would be spiritual, number two would be family, number three would be health, number four would be integrity, number five would be career. In this case, the person would always choose integrity over their career. They would choose health over their career. They choose family over their career. They would choose spiritual and inner development over their career. A person who organizes their values and their life consistent with those values like this is going to be a far happier and healthier person than a person who places material things ahead of intangible things. Now, the third point is that peace of mind occurs naturally when your goals and your values are aligned. You can use the inner peace test to determine whether you're doing what's right for you. You can always tell what's right for you because whenever you're doing it, whenever you're doing something that's completely aligned with your values, you'll always feel good inside. Whenever you do something that is inconsistent with your values, inconsistent with your own unique organization of priorities in life, you feel uncomfortable. Sometimes people are working at jobs that they don't enjoy. They're frustrated and dissatisfied. It's not because there's anything wrong with the job. It just means that the job is wrong for that person. The people doing the job can be excellent. The company can be excellent. The product or service can be excellent. But it may be wrong for you. So you have to ask by just sitting down and saying, how do I feel about this? How do I feel about this choice, about this decision, about this job, about this relationship? And the answer is that if you feel good inside, if you feel calm, if you feel peaceful, if you feel at ease inside, it means that it's right for you. And if you feel dissatisfied for any reason, it means that it's probably wrong for you. And the fourth point is to ask, what part of your life is stressful? Where are your activities out of sync with your basic values and convictions? Where are your activities and your goals inconsistent with what is really important to you? And most of all, what are you going to do about it? In our seminars, we talk a lot about the C word, C standing for courage. And we say that if you're going to ask yourself, what are your values? If you're going to identify what it is that's important to you, you have to have the courage to follow where this line of reasoning leads. If you say that one of your most important values is inner peace or peace of mind or personal happiness or health or a feeling of personal satisfaction or self-esteem, then you have to be willing to look at your life and to go systematically through your life and adjust or eliminate those situations and activities and people that deprive you of inner peace and satisfaction and self-esteem. You have to have the courage to follow where your reasoning leads you. Now, once you're clear about your values, it's much easier to set priorities. And here are some key ideas to help you determine your priorities. The first key idea is what is called the Pareto Principle, which is the 80-20 rule. An Italian economist named Vilfredo Pareto in 1895 concluded that you could divide not only people but activities into what he called the vital few versus the trivial many. And he said that in any number of activities, in any population of any size, there were the 20% of activities that accounted for 80% of the value of those activities, and then there were 80% of activities that only accounted for 20% of the value. This Pareto principle has subsequently been applied to virtually every single area of modern life. It's been found, for instance, that 20% of your customers give you 80% of your business, that 20% of your products account for 80% of your sales, that 20% of the restaurants that you know account for 80% of the times that you go out for dinner, that 80% of your problems come from 20% of the people that you know, and so on. But it also means that 20% of what you do accounts for 80% of the value of what you do. And in some cases, it's 90-10, that 10% of what you do accounts for 90% of the value of what you do. So what I recommend is that you Pareto principle everything, that you 80-20 everything. Before you start doing anything, you always ask, is what I'm doing amongst the 20% that accounts for 80% of the value? Every single day and every single hour of every day, break up your activities and what you do into this 80-20. Take some time to think before you act, and always concentrate on the 20% that accounts for most of the value. Now, the second key to setting priorities is to separate the urgent from the important. Now, there are many things that are urgent, like a ringing telephone, somebody coming into your office, an unexpected interruption, and so on, that are not particularly important. And important things, things that have long-term consequences, are very seldom urgent. The things that you should be working on most of the time during your working day are things that are both urgent and important, things that have to be done and that have long-term positive or negative consequences if they are done or not done. The third key to help you set priorities is what is called the limiting step principle. And it has been discovered that between you and any goal you want to accomplish, there's almost invariably a limiting step, which is the bottleneck that determines the speed at which you accomplish that goal. And one of the keys to personal effectiveness is to look at your work on a day-to-day basis, even an hour-to-hour basis, and say, what is the limiting step that determines how quickly I achieve what I'm trying to accomplish? how quickly I get from where I am to where I want to go. What is the bottleneck that determines the speed at which I get there? Sometimes when I'm consulting for a corporation, I'll ask a question like this. How many companies here depend for their business on responses to their advertising, on people telephoning the company in response to their advertising? Now, there are always managers who will say, yes, that's how we do our business. We advertise and we expect people to phone us. I say, now, can you provide all the goods or services that people want to buy if you were to have a tremendous rush? They say, yes, we can provide all that our customers can buy. I say, so the limiting step in the growth of your business, the limiting step in profitability, the limiting step in success in your career is the number of qualified prospects who call on the phone. Is that correct? And they'll say, well, yes, it is. So therefore, if that's the limiting step, then the best minds in the business, the most creative intelligence, should be focused single-mindedly on getting that telephone to ring with more qualified prospects to the exclusion of everything else. Because if you can do just that one thing, which is alleviate that limiting step or bottleneck, if you can get the phone to ring more often, that alone will lead to the accomplishment of all other goals in the company. Is that correct? By identifying the limiting step, it enables them to set a very clear order of priority on what they should be doing versus what they shouldn't be doing. And this is true in almost every area of your work and your personal life. The fourth idea is to ask, what is the future impact of a present action? What we have found is that if something is of a high priority, it can have a high future impact, or it can have very positive or negative consequences if it is done or not done. Something that is of low priority has no consequences at all if it is done or not done. Let me give you an example. If you were to launch a new advertising campaign, or to take a course that upgraded your skills in your profession, or to read a book or listen to a tape program like this, that has potential long-term impact. Playing with your children, spending time with your family, has potential long-term impact for the happiness and health of yourself and your family and your children. However, watching television, reading the sports page, having a cup of coffee, going out for lunch, is a very low priority task because it has no future possible impact on your family or on your life. In other words, nothing of any consequence is going to come as a result of having coffee, whereas reading a book, investing in yourself, working an extra hour, making extra calls, and so on, can have long-term positive consequences. So asking yourself, what are the possible consequences of my actions? What are the possible future positive or even negative consequences of my actions? Gives you a very clear idea of what is important to do and what is unimportant for you to do. Now, a fifth idea in terms of setting priorities is what I call creative procrastination, which means that you must learn to procrastinate creatively on the 80% of things that you have to do that account for only 20% of the value. In other words, if you procrastinate long enough on low-priority tasks, on low-value tasks, eventually you end up not doing them at all. So procrastination is not bad as long as you procrastinate on tasks that have no particularly high payoff. Now, the sixth idea is doing the right thing versus doing things right. It's been said that the difference between leaders and managers is that leaders do the right things and managers simply do things right. So one of the most important things you can do is to sit down and think through, what are the right things to do? What are the right things for you and others to concentrate your time and attention on? Remember, if it's not worth doing, it's not worth doing right. Now, the seventh idea is what is called setting posteriorities. You heard about setting priorities. We're now talking about setting posteriorities, which means stopping something or asking yourself, before I launch on a new project or set a new goal or make a new commitment, what am I going to stop doing? What am I going to cut out? What am I going to eliminate? What activities am I going to delete? And setting posteriorities, deciding to stop doing something, to stop associating with someone, to stop engaging in a particular type of activity, requires both courage, the C word, and decisiveness. Because no matter how talented or energetic you are, you can only do so much. And the biggest mistake that people make that cause their priorities to become all out of whack is they keep taking on new things to do without consciously deciding what they're going to delete or stop doing. Now, the eighth idea in setting priorities is what we talked about earlier, the A, B, C, D, E method, where A means things that you must do that are vital and important and urgent, And B means things that you should do, but they're not urgent. And C means things that are nice to do, but there's no negative consequences if you don't do them at all. And D means things that you should delegate or outsource or refer to others. And E means eliminate and ask, what would happen if this weren't done at all? If there are no negative consequences to completely eliminating a task, then it's important that you make the decision to eliminate it. Let me go back to delegate for just one second. One of the greatest trends that's taking place in the modern business world today is what is called outsourcing, where instead of doing it yourself, you find someone who specializes in doing it outside of your company or outside of your home, and you have them do it. The decision to look for opportunities to outsource or delegate or get things done by other people to free you up for the things that only you can do is a critical part of setting and maintaining priorities. Now, here are some ideas for developing personal and corporate effectiveness. These are questions for you to ask and answer. The first question, one of the most important for you personally, is this. What are your unique strengths and talents? What do you do especially well? What do you do especially well now? What have you done well in the past? Or what skills and abilities and qualities account for your greatest successes in life and work to date? Where are you good? Where are you better than your competition? Or where do you have the ability to become outstanding? You see, most of your results in life come from your skills and abilities in just a few limited areas. And one of the characteristics of leaders is that they only choose positions and accept jobs and responsibilities where they know they have the ability to perform to distinction. So thinking through over your past life, your past successes, your past jobs, your past occupations, and identifying what it is you do well, where it is you perform in a superior fashion, is one of the starting points of channeling your life, your work, and your efforts into areas where you can really make a difference for yourself and for your company. Here's the second question. Where can you perform to distinction? What parts of your job do you do better than other parts, and how could you organize your work in such a way so that you could just be doing that? Let me give you an example. One of the most successful insurance salesmen in the world sells $100 million worth of insurance every single year. He has a staff of 42 people, all of whom he pays out of his own commissions. These people do 100% of the detail work that is involved in servicing $100 million worth of new customers per year. He does only one thing, makes the appointments, and deals directly face-to-face, belly-to-belly, with the customer, with the client. That's the thing that he does the best. He does that better than anybody. And so he hires people to do everything else except that so he can concentrate on doing only that and doing it well. So analyzing yourself and saying, what is it that I do better than anything else and how could I organize my time so I just do that may be the starting point of you really starting to use your time to its maximum effectiveness. Now, the third point in personal and corporate effectiveness has to do with mastery and excellence. Doing what you do well is a key to higher productivity. Doing more of what you do well and doing less of what you don't do well can sometimes dramatically increase your output. And taking the time, making the efforts, learning what you need to know to become good at your most important tasks is one of the fastest and most powerful ways to increase your performance and your output. A fourth question is, what qualities, products, services, and abilities account for your company's greatest successes? In other words, why is it that your company has grown from where it started to where it is today? How is it recognized in the marketplace? Where is your company good? In what areas does the company perform well? What is the company's area of excellence or area of competitive advantage? Or put another way, where and why is your company and your products and services superior to your competition? Idea number five, does the 80-20 rule apply to your company? What are the most profitable, successful products and services that your company offers? What are the top 20% that account for most of your sales, most of your profitability? Who are the most important customers? Who are the top 20% of customers which are the most valuable to you? Who are the top 20% of the most important potential customers that if you could get, it would make an extraordinary difference? Idea number six with regard to personal and corporate effectiveness is what is called corporate triage, which is based on the discovery during World War I when they had so many people being wounded in the front lines on the Western Front they couldn't possibly handle them all. There were not enough doctors and nurses. So they began dividing them into three groups. The first group was the group that would die anyway, whether or not they got medical attention. The second group was the group that would survive anyway, whether or not they got medical attention because they had light wounds. The third group was the group that would survive only if they got medical attention. By dividing them into the three groups, they then focused all of their initial attention on the group that would survive if they got medical attention. Then they went to the group that was only lightly wounded, and other people helped make those who would die anyway comfortable. Now, with regard to your corporation, we call these winners, survivors, and losers. So question number 6 for personal and corporate effectiveness concerns your products and is based on corporate triage. You have to ask yourself with regard to your products, which are your products that no matter how much you market them, no matter how hard you sell them, no matter what you do to them, they still are not making much of an impression in the marketplace. They are still losers. They're not going to win. These are the ones that sooner or later are going to die anyway because the market is telling you that they don't want them. The second is, which are your products that are your winners? Which are your winners that are going to survive anyway, that are going to continue anyway? And the third question is, which are the ones that if you spend some time on, if you redesign, repackage, if you market or sell better, you can turn them into winners? And dividing your products that way enables you to see your products in three separate categories and to set priorities on how you commit time and resources to marketing and maximizing your products or services in the marketplace. Do the same with your life activities. Do the same with your relationships. Do the same with your customers. Which are your winners? Which are your potential winners? And which are your losers, the ones who are never going to buy or who buy so little that it doesn't make that much difference? Here's question number 7 for personal and corporate effectiveness. Always ask, where do we go from here? Remember, setting priorities requires discarding the past, requires setting aside the things that you've done in the past and focusing on the future. Focus on opportunities rather than on problems. Focus on solutions rather than on problems. Always ask, where do we go from here? Remember, the future is the most important part of your life because you're going to spend the rest of your life in it. In most companies, 80% of the time of the senior people is spent on the problems of yesterday. That means that only 20% of their time is spent on the opportunities of tomorrow. So choose the future over the past. Always be asking, what do we do from here? Where do we go from here? Where are our opportunities? What lies ahead for us in the future? What can we change today to assure that our future is consistent with what we desire? Question number 8, do I focus my time on the first 20% of a task? The first 20% of the time that you spend on any task usually accounts for 80% of the value of that task or that activity. For instance, if you're in sales, getting the initial appointment and getting face-to-face with the decision-maker is the first 20% of the transaction, but it accounts for 80% of the value. The presentation, the close, the follow-up, the delivery of the product or service, and so on, is the second 80%, but it only accounts for 20%. Therefore, focus always on the first 20% and get on with it and get it done. Get on with it and get it done. Question number 9, ask yourself, do I resist the temptation to clear up small things first? Never succumb to the temptation to clear up small things first. Don't get bogged down in low priority activities. The natural tendency for all of us is we make a list of everything we have to do, and then we say, well, I'll get rid of all this little stuff, and then my mind will be clear and I can concentrate on the big stuff. However, I'll tell you something, little stuff multiplies. And if you go to work on little stuff, you never, never get caught up with it. So the key is to refuse to work on small stuff. How do you know it's small stuff? Because it has no future impact. How do you know it's small stuff? Because it's not part of the 20% that accounts for 80% of your results. How do you know that it's small stuff? Because there's no negative consequences for doing it or not doing it. So refuse to give in to the temptation to clear up small things first. Start right off with your most important task. The key to setting priorities, the essence of time management, can be summed up in one simple question. Question number 10, what is the most valuable use of my time right now? One of the characteristics of very effective people is they always do the most important things first, they give themselves enough time, and they do things one at a time, and they stay with them until they're complete. Ask and answer over and over again every single day. What is the most valuable use of my time right now? What is the most valuable use of my time right now? And then discipline yourself to work on what is the most valuable use of your time, and to do only that and to stay with it until it's complete. In fact, if you could only learn one principle in time management, I believe this is more important than all others. If you could ask and answer accurately, what is the most valuable use of my time, and then discipline yourself to work only on that until it's finished, that alone will increase your productivity by 50% the very first day you try it. If you could only finish one thing before you went away for a month, what would it be? If you could only finish one more thing before you went away for a month, what would the second thing be, and the third thing, and so on? Remember, all other uses of time, other than the most valuable use of your time, are, relatively speaking, a waste of time, and therefore a waste of life. The wonderful thing is that when you are working single-mindedly on your highest priority task, you have an unending flow of energy, enthusiasm, and self-esteem. But if you work very, very hard on low-priority tasks, you get no bang for the buck. You get no self-esteem, you get no excitement, and you get no pleasure out of completing low-priority tasks. The only time you get joy and satisfaction out of your work is when you're working on something which you know is at the top of your list in terms of its value and its possible future impact and consequences on your life. Self-discipline is the key to setting priorities. It is the key to success.